Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Growth Matters Radio.
Well, good morning. Here we are again for another episode of Growth Matters Radio, where we talk about all things growth. I'm your host, Michelle Matthews, and today we have two very interesting individuals that are going to share a little bit about their journey. They're both with Swerdlin and Company, which is a full-service employees benefit firm with a focus on retirement plans. And I think we got a little bit of an interesting twist for you. We have the COO and president of Swerdlin, Lee Swerdlin, is with us today. But we also have Karen Dixon Burroughs, who is the vice president of Defined Contribution Services. And Karen had her own business up until September when Swerdlin actually acquired them. So not only will we hear a little bit about Swerdlin and the company today, but we'll also understand a little bit of that journey of an acquisition and sort of the thought process that goes into that. So we're really excited. Karen's business was QPA, which was Qualified Plan Administrators. And so welcome, Karen and Lee.
Thank you.
Good morning.
So before we get into a little bit about the merger and acquisition process, what I'd like to kind of get a sense of is a little bit about both of your organizations. And so I'm going to start with you, Karen, and tell us a little bit about Qualified Plan Administrators and what you used to do, and then we'll segue into what Lee's organization does and how the two of you came together.
Okay. Qualified Plan Administrators started as a division in a CPA firm. And that was a need that the CPA firm had, and it's such a specialty field that it's tough to keep somebody up to speed on all the regulations. So we started this department, and that's how I got into the 401k and pension and profit sharing administration business. We grew into up to 9 employees at one point in time, and we handled 350 to 400 retirement plans. What we have done during this period of time, and QPA was in business from 1995 through August 31st when it was acquired by Swerdlin. We set up and administered 401k pension profit sharing plans, online access for employees to log in, check balances, move money around. As a matter of fact, I think QPA was probably the first in the Southeast that actually had online and 800 telephone access to their 401k accounts. And that was in about 1988 or 89 through the CPA firm.
Okay, great. So, Lee, why don't you tell us about the current day Swerdlin and Company? This is a family-owned business, as I understand it, and you are born and bred here in Atlanta for a number of generations, so that's always exciting for our listeners. So talk to us a little bit about your firm.
Sure, yeah. Well, my parents, Dorn and Joanne Swerdlin, started the firm back in 1980. Dorn is an actuary, and he was working with some of the larger CPA firms as an actuary. And in the mid to late 70s, felt like there was a great opportunity for him to go out on his own and start a firm where he could work with smaller to mid-size organizations, where with the CPA firm, he was working with much bigger firms. So he felt like there was a niche for smaller firms to work on pension plans. So throughout the years, we have actually grown, you know, one plan at a time in certain cases, but we've also looked for different opportunities to acquire firms and grow through acquisition. And about 5 years ago, we really started to focus on that and actually found an acquisition as we were hunting, and it actually ended up being in Massachusetts. That acquisition is about 3 years old now, and so we were continuing to work through that process and actually met Karen, and her firm was very similar to ours in culture. When we're looking at acquisitions, one of the things that is really important to us is just not growing from numbers, but to make sure that the cultures mix. And so when we met Karen, we felt like the way she does business is very similar to how we've grown our business and do business. And so it has been so far has been a great fit for us.
Great. And so we're going to just a little bit later dive into the whole acquisition process and kind of some of the things that you think about and even maybe some of the challenges. But, you know, as we think about this environment today, anytime we hear the term benefits, we think about the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. And so before we get too far into it, let's just get that off the table and help our listeners understand how you perceive that act as impacting employee benefits and compensation today.
Sure. Well, you know, a lot of the Affordable Care Act has been employers asking questions. How is it going to affect us? What is it going to do to the insurance in the future? One of the things that it's doing is it's making it difficult for employers to continue offering all the benefits that they currently have. Cost of the benefits is forcing employers to choose between reducing the benefits they offer and shifting more cost to the employees, and reducing some employees' working hours. So again, there are a lot of factors that are going in, and a lot of people really have a lot of questions. Karen and I were talking this morning. We feel like next year will be a big transition year. A lot of questions will probably be answered, but again, it seems to be very uncertain right now how things are going to shake out.
Yeah. So, as you think about this whole area, Karen, as we think of that term benefits, help our listeners understand a little bit about what that employee benefits really mean, so that they have an understanding of that area.
Employee benefits can mean anything from non-cash benefits such as vacation time or sick leave or housing allowances, health insurance, all the way down to qualified retirement plans where the plan sponsor is actually making a cash contribution for the employee along with what the employee is able to defer.
Okay. So share with our listeners a little bit about how you service your clients. You know, take us through maybe an example of a client that might come to you and how you've helped them address the issues that they're facing in the area of employee benefits.
Sure. Well, you know, one of the things we do and focus on is the administration and compliance on a 401k plan, as an example. So typically we will be referred in from a third party, whether it be a CPA or an investment advisor. They'll recommend us whether the plan has an issue that we need to correct, or simply they're looking for a firm that's local, that's more of a boutique firm to help them with the administration and record keeping of their plan. So from the perspective of the employer, we're working with them to make sure the plan stays compliant with the law. We're doing the discrimination testing for the 401k plans each year. And from an employee perspective, we offer online access so they can view their account, move their money around, and know what's in their account, the money they have in for retirement.
Yeah. So, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're good.
Karen, you had mentioned that when you were with the CPA firm, it's just really hard to stay up with all the information and all the compliance. So talk to our listeners a little bit about how you all at Swerdlin do that so that you can be the most knowledgeable for your clients.
There are very limited avenues for employee benefits people to get continuing education. The largest provider is the American Society of Pension Professionals and Actuaries in Washington or Arlington. Or Alexandria, I guess. And we go to those conferences that they provide, whether it's in D.C., like I'll be in D.C. in 2 weeks for 4 days, attending a conference that'll probably have 2,000-plus people there. I go to conferences here in Atlanta and all over Georgia and probably South Carolina as well, and I think other members of the firm do too. There are other certifications, such as the Internal Revenue Service established a certification about 4 years ago called Enrolled Retirement Plan Agent, and they had these specifications and different courses you had to take and then actual written exams you had to sit for. And once you could pass the exams that they had set aside, then you got your certification as an Enrolled Retirement Plan Agent. And what that allows us to do is actually practice before Internal Revenue Service in the situation where Lee was talking about, where a client might come in and have a problem with a plan and they need us to help them. They've gotten an IRS notice or a Department of Labor notice. Then you have to be able to practice before that entity in order to help them with that notice, which is what my role is.
Yeah, so as you're thinking about all that you have to do to stay compliant, we have young listeners to our show. And tell us a little bit about each of your background that helped prepare you to be in the role that you're in.
Well, for me, when I went to college, my degree was in accounting. So as I mentioned, you can't get these classes at college in most situations. I think there is a college here in Atlanta, Georgia State, that offers a few pension classes, but not a whole lot. So if you have a background in accounting or a background in finance, this is a perfect avenue for you to start looking to see if I want to expand, or if you just go into the CPA world and you realize I'm going to be working 100 hours a week for 6 months out of the year and maybe I don't want to do that, this may be an area you want to look to grow into.
Okay. And Lee, kind of how did you – obviously your father and your mother were a part of this, but what drove your interest to say, yep, I want to be a part of the family business?
Well, my background in college was actually in psychology, but it's funny how you get out of school and you're looking for opportunities, and the family business was an opportunity for me to grow. And so I actually really started in the firm as a benefits administrator, working with conversions and inputting data into the system. And so I really learned from the ground up, and more through osmosis than it was technical training for me. So I've kind of learned it on the ground, if you will.
Yeah. So what's the biggest challenge you have about you obviously are an organization, company that's focused on growth. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the biggest challenges you have about preparing for that growth and servicing your clients at the same time?
Well, certainly, we always want to be growing, because if you're not growing, the alternative is not that great. But we always encourage our folks to do continuing education, which is the last conversation we had, to make sure that everybody is up on the current laws. And from our from my perspective, looking forward, making sure that we are. Bringing on new business, the business that we're bringing on is good, and we're not taking on business that's not going to be profitable for us, and it's going to hurt the bottom line for us. Looking for different opportunities out there to grow and to stay moving forward has been a big focus of mine over the last few years.
And as you think about that growth, do you have a particular profile of a client that you're looking for? A lot of times we think about sort of the sweet spot. And so as you've been thinking about growing, how do you think about that target market and who you're actually trying to work with?
Well, our target market, that's a great question, is a lot of times people look at size. I feel like our target market is more of a sophisticated employer who understands the value that we can bring to them. We are more consultants. We do handhold our clients and really get to know them and understand what their issues are, each year. We're not a cookie cutter shop that just kind of says, here's the data and we're going to talk to you once a year. We're going to do what we do and then move on. We're very much relationship people, and that's what keeps our clients around for many years. We have several clients that have been with us for over 20 years, and that doesn't happen by accident.
Sure.
And could I add something to that? One of the things that's important for me to share with a client or with a potential client is we don't have a box that we want you to fit into. It's our job to sit down and listen to you and to listen to what your needs are and what you're trying to accomplish for yourself, your company, and your employees. And we create the retirement plan that's going to best work for you and your company. There are other companies out there that say, here's what we do, and this is what you're going to invest in, and this is how your money is going to be managed. And we just don't do that. That does not create a boutique shop. And our goal is to be what the client needs us to be and to still keep them within the confines of the law.
Right. So it's interesting. I'm sitting here and in the studio as each of you are talking. Both of you are very much nodding your head about sort of how you do business and you're having agreement with that. Karen, talk to us a little bit about, you had your own business, and obviously something made you decide that this is so you would consider being acquired. So tell us a little bit about what was going on and what influenced your decision.
I think the biggest thing for me was actually meeting these guys and realizing that their philosophy was so similar to mine that it was almost scary. They treat their clients the same way that I do mine. My clients are my friends. I want to know their kids. I want to know their dog. I want to know what they do, where they're going on vacation. I want it to be a family atmosphere, not just for me and my employees, but for the clients as well. One of the big selling factors for me was that we aren't closing the Augusta office. We're keeping the staff. And I've had employees that have been with me for 16, 17 years. And had that been a deciding factor, if they had said to me, I'm going to close the Augusta office, I wouldn't have sold. It was that black and white for me. Knowing that their philosophy about their clients and how they're going to treat them is so similar to mine was the big thing. That and knowing also that we could offer additional services to the clients that we had that I did not have access to, like flexible spending accounts or cafeteria plan administration or actually even ESOP administration, which I can do, but I do so few of them, I have to relearn it every time I do it. So this was the perfect match.
So had you ever considered merging or selling your organization before you met Lee?
No, and the first time I actually talked to them was 5 years ago, about 5 years ago, and put it off. So, no, and we've stayed in touch, obviously, all this time, and I haven't really talked to anybody else about selling. I think when you find the perfect personality match, you best jump on it because they're not out there all the time.
Yeah. I think your point that you you said you're a psychology major.
Mm-hmm.
And so you mentioned culture, and as somebody that does a lot of change management work and a lot of strategic planning work, not everybody understands that there might be a lot of good things that you can bring together, a lot of synergy with the services, but if the partnership can't work from a value perspective, from a how you go about doing business, you know, it can be difficult. So talk to us a little bit, Lee, about the culture of your organization. So we've heard a little bit from Karen, but talk to us about that, and in particular, how it maybe changes as you bring other companies into the fold.
Sure. Well, culture, in my mind, is key. And when we look at growing and we look at different acquisitions, that really is the first – that's one of the first factors that we put into it. Will this marriage, if you will, work? Can we move on going forward with a good relationship, a good working relationship with the new entity, if you will? You know, for an example, with our acquisition in Massachusetts a few years ago, that was really one of the first things that we looked into was we knew we were going to keep that office open. That was very important to us, as well as the Augusta office, because we're not looking to acquire, bring everything into Atlanta. You know, we know that, in fact, our motto is really to keep things as closely as they are the same, and because the organizations, both organizations that we've acquired, have been in business for over 20 years and have done well on their own. So they really, you know, we wanted to impact the change impact we wanted to be as less as possible. But again, looking at that is so important. We've had a few meetings in the last few years with other businesses where we felt like the culture and it was not going to be a mix, and so we really didn't get too far down the line with those conversations because again, it's you know, meeting Karen, one of the things that we hit it off really well, and it was, you know, one of the things that was obvious is that we were going to be able to work together. Karen's joined the firm. It's been very seamless, and she's getting to know everybody, and also working and finding out the differences in the way we did things. But again, we're gonna come together and improve our services and we'll improve our services, and we're looking forward to that for sure.
Yeah. So you're, if I understand it correctly, September 1 was the sort of the official date of the acquisition. So, Karen, talk to us a little bit about how you, because you are a trusted advisor, and you talked about how they're your clients are your friends. How have you been making that transition so that your clients still feel like they're being serviced, and yet understand the other options maybe that they're available to them as a result of this acquisition?
We sent a letter out initially telling them what we were doing and all of the services that would be available to them that they don't currently have. But as far as a transition, it has been so seamless, my clients haven't noticed it. They're still calling the Augusta number. They still access their 401k accounts the way that they did before. Their own staff contact person is still the same. So for my guys, nothing has changed at all.
I'm curious. Now, I've had a transition, not so much with a financial advisor, but with a bank. And that whole technology change, because you mentioned there's some things that your firm pioneered. Talk to our listeners a little bit about how you think through sort of the back end portion of an acquisition in terms of how they get to, your clients still get to use the technology, but if you're on different platforms, and I don't know if you were, kind of how did that,
We're not, which made it beautiful. Okay. We have the same platform for our retirement plan access, so that's why it's been so seamless.
Great. How about in your other acquisitions? You know, what has been your biggest? So this one sounds like it's definitely a good sweet spot of a good match. But have there been some things in perhaps your other acquisition that surprised you?
Well, we've been lucky with our platforms because the softwares that we use have been the same. So we've been able to import and actually do that fairly seamlessly. But we've, you know, there are definitely things we've learned. You know, we've had to combine, you know, certain functions that go. And so there's certain things that we have definitely brought into Atlanta with the Massachusetts acquisition that was just no-brainers. But really, from a technology perspective, it's been fairly seamless, which has been fortunate for us because those can be big challenges, and those can certainly be very costly if you have to endure those changes.
Yeah, so as I said, it sounds like this has been a very seamless transition. But, Karen, certainly there's been something that maybe, and not necessarily that was negative, but that surprised you in terms of going from being a leader of an organization where you are the leader to being a leader within an organization, even if you're bringing all the other people along. So dig a little deep there and give our listeners a little window into maybe some challenges that you've had making the transition.
The only challenge I can think of, and it really is not a challenge, but the only thing that I have to get used to is being self-employed for all of these years and making all of the decisions and writing all of the checks. If I decided I wanted to buy a copier today, I had the copier tomorrow. Well, that takes a little longer now because there is a chain of command that it has to go through, and it has to be reviewed, and they have to decide, is it the right one, or is this one too expensive, or can we get it cheaper somewhere else? That is the only adjustment that I've seen that I'm having to make, yeah. Period. I've come into Swerdlin as part of the leadership management team, and this group of people actually meets multiple times during the week, and as a unit, we run the company.
Great. Lee, you're shaking your head. Any surprises for you in terms of things that you have to do differently as you acquire more organizations, just from your own personal leadership style?
Well, it's, you know, having the Augusta office and the Massachusetts office, it is a different mindset because it's, you know, when out of sight, out of mind, in some certain, you know, in some cases it can be tough. I have to remind myself in certain situations and conversations that, wow, we have that as an opportunity, or just making sure that I'm not neglecting the outside offices is an important thing for me. It's only been a couple of months, but really, in my mind, what Karen's brought to the organization has been huge. I mean, she brings a lot of insight from different industry functions, different industry advisors out there. So I think she's brought a lot of strength, and she's very in touch with what's going on in the retirement plan industry and the benefits world. So that's been a great thing for us because sometimes we get focused on what we're doing so much that we're not looking outside. And so Karen's brought that that aspect to us, which has been great for me.
Great. Speaking of looking outside and your point about if you're not growing, then the alternative as a business person is not necessarily what you're looking for. How you talked a little bit about training, but talk to us a little bit about some trends. What is kind of some things that are happening in the industry that helps our listeners understand kind of where things are going and things that they need to be thinking about going forward?
Well, one of our specialties is working with ESOPs, which is employee stock ownership plans. And the whole concept of employee ownership is really fascinating and an interest in our company as well as with myself. So we feel in the next 5 years, as many baby boomers reach that age to looking for an exit strategy, and also when you look at the country, The amount of businesses that are going to be out there looking for an exit strategy, maybe looking to sell, and the number of buyers, I think there's going to be, you know, there's going to be a disconnect between that. So mm-hmm. with an ESOP, it's a way for a business owner to actually sell a portion of their stock back to the company through a retirement plan. And then it allows that owner to get some liquidity out of their company and, again, give it back, you know, reward the people that got them there. And to me, I think it's going to be a design and an opportunity for our company to grow, as well as for just the whole ownership culture of our country to thrive. And so I'm really, you know, it's something that I'm passionate about. It's something that I think is going to be very interesting to see how it evolves. I think there's about 10 to 12,000 ESOP companies in the country now. A lot of them started out in the West. There's several in the Midwest, and it's kind of catching on more in the Southeast. But I do believe that we'll see more and more of that as baby boomers hit that point.
Karen, are there other trends or things that are happening that you would also highlight for our listeners that might be key for them to be, you know, sort of keeping on their radar?
No, at this point, I'm not coming up with a thing.
Okay, that's fine. You know, as you were talking about baby boomers, and then I'm also we're kind of going back to at the top of the show, we were talking about the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, one of the premises there is that younger, healthy individuals, you know, have to come into the pool in order for this to be affordable. Mm-hmm. And so that what connection I made, not so much on the healthcare side, is that when you're young, you feel invincible. You feel retirement is so far down the line that it may not be top of mind. And so, again, we have a broad range of listeners. I'd be interested if you obviously, you'd have to talk to people individually to understand their specific situation. But, you know, just one or two things for those starting their career as they think about eventually they're going to need to retire. And then on the flip side, those of us that maybe are further into our career but not yet ready to retire but are beginning to feel, if I don't focus on that, I might be challenged. So I'll look to either one of you to kind of talk about both ends of the spectrum and what are a couple of tips you can give our listeners this morning?
Well, I'd say it's never too late to save. You know, when you're in your 20s and you're entering the workforce, if your employer offers a 401k plan and they're doing some sort of a match, the least you should do is look at see what they're, you know, if they're matching 50 cents up to the first 6%, you know, put that 6% in because you're leaving free money on the table if you don't. You know, so it's and you know, compound interest over 30, 40 years is significant. And you know, from the 20 to 30, if you look out on the time horizon, it's the magnitude of the savings and the compound interest that you'll get over that time period is huge. The other thing Karen and I were talking about this morning is that you know, when you look at employers have a tendency to look at healthcare and look at retirement kind of more in a silo and look at it separately. But really, if you think about it, it needs to be more of a holistic approach because we have a crisis. We have a retirement crisis in America right now. The average American at retirement has about $50,000 to $75,000 in their 401k account. I read the other day that the average American can expect to spend between $150,000 to $200,000 in medical expenses from their age of 65 through death, and that's outside of Medicare. So again, if you look at those numbers, people are retiring, and what they're going to be spending in just healthcare alone, we have a crisis. So people really need to think about that because as the workforces age, premiums on the healthcare are increasing. So it's harder and harder for employers to be able to offer the same benefits that they're offering now, and then as the employees get to retirement age, they don't have enough money to retire. So we encourage, opportunity we have to talk to employees, we encourage them to save more, and we also are talking to employers about the best way to get employees to save is with some type of a match, some type of employer contribution to give them some incentive to put money in. Of course, when economy's tight, one of the first things to go is that employer contribution. But again, it's something that we try to help our employers and employees understand how the give and take of that is. But really, I mean, when we get in front of a group of employees about saving, you know, the saving 101 is such an important thing, and just knowing how, you know, an extra 10 years of, even if you're putting in 3% of your pay, it really does make a difference over the long haul.
One of the things I would suggest to the young people out there today is, and I know you think you're bulletproof, but you're not, go out to Google retirement calculator and just play with that calculator. Go ahead and put in some numbers, like Lee mentioned, 3 or 4% of salary. Pick a magic number. I don't care if it's $10 a week. Put it in this retirement calculator and assume a reasonable interest rate, 5 or 6%, and see what, if you started at age 20, you would have accumulated by the time you were 55. And then change your numbers to say, okay, what if I put in $20 every week and I don't start until I'm 30? How much will I have at 55? You will never catch up. And the difference between the balances you will have available at age 55 is astounding.
Hmm. I think certainly we're seeing that the economy is, you know, glimmers here of hope. We kind of take some steps forward, and then things happen that maybe have us feeling like we're taking a step back. But, you know, one of the things that was very early in my career that had me starting to do consulting was that I was at a large firm where I had to let some people go that thought that they would be with that organization for the rest of their life. And me seeing that at a young age had me think about how do I want to protect myself for when I reach that age, that if it's not exactly the way I want it to be, that I have done the best that I could to establish a career in this case that would be long going. That's sort of a long-winded way of me setting some context to ask you, we have been through a tough time, and people have this whole issue of benefits and retirement is so top of mind for so many people that are in a different place today than they thought they would be even a few years ago. So can you, from thinking about how you're helping your clients sort of deal through what we've just been through as a country with the recession, what do you tell to employers that you sort of learn the lesson from these things that you're seeing, and also to individuals? I don't know if you have some specific tips.
Well, for me, I guess thinking back to 2008 when the stock market was really so bad and the economy was even much worse than it is today, and we did not experience but one client actually terminating their plan out of all the ones that we had. But we did see quite a few, like Lee mentioned, stop in employer contributions. So I think at that point in time for me, it was being able to sit down with the plan sponsor and convince them not to terminate the plan. Even if you stop funding it for the short haul, let the employees still have that opportunity to fund for themselves. And when the economy turns back around, you can start your contributions again, which is exactly what happened.
Hmm. That's great. I don't know, Lee, do you have any sort of insights that you might share with our business owners?
You know, it was interesting watching some of the ESOP companies that we worked with through the recession. Some of them were, had businesses that were totally impacted by the real estate market. Some of them were, some of them actually with their ESOP. Allowed them to have cash on hand that would really allow them to ride out the storm, and now they're actually improving and doing well as the real estate market is starting to come back. A few we saw actually were bought out and have moved on, but yeah, it's tough. Yeah. It really is tough when people are you see successful companies that have done great. Having bad times and it's a tough conversation.
Yeah, but it seems that both of you have been able to weather that. So what have you done to ensure that you are in a position to grow as the economy bounces back? Are there certain things that you and your leadership team make sure are in place so that you can weather some of the challenging storms?
Well, we felt it. You know, we had to, we had to cut back. We had to, really thin our expenses as much as we possibly could. There was certainly a couple years where, how's things going? And we're surviving. That was pretty much the word of the day. Have put certain things in place. One of the things that I think has benefited us is we look at our forecasts 3 months out. So we know, our indicators talk to us, and we can see when things are starting to go down a little bit, so we can make those quick decisions. Being a smaller organization, we have that ability to be able to be a little more nimble maybe than some of the larger companies. And when we start to see trends and we see things that are, maybe our projections are off, we do our best to make those quick decisions and avoid having big valleys.
So you both are executives in entrepreneurial venture, and I'm sure it's fast and furious most of the time. Talk to our audience a little bit about how do you sort of balance, and what are some of your other passions, Karen, that you do personally to kind of offset some of the stress of being an owner and then making a transition into an acquisition situation?
Work is my hobby. I hate to even tell you that, but it's true. I love what I do. I've been doing this since 1974. I don't have another hobby.
Okay. So your passion is your work.
It is. I just love what I do, and I love the people. I think if you look at it from the perspective that you're not just pushing a pencil, you're not just being a consultant, you're helping somebody figure out the rest of their life, and it's rewarding. I enjoy it. So I can't come up with anything I'd rather do.
Well, that's great. And Lee, I understand you have a lot of your family is here in Atlanta, mm-hmm. and you have a son, I think you
A son and a daughter. Yeah.
Okay, so talk to us a little bit about how you, as a busy executive, is having to bring that balance and be there for family.
Well, my son just turned 5, and my daughter will be 2 in November, so they're certainly keeping us busy. And, I think this weekend coming up, we've got birthday party for my son Graham, and we have another birthday party to attend. So it seems like these weekends recently have been devoted to birthday parties and running around with the children. I went to University of Alabama, so college football is a huge passion of mine. Okay. So if I'm lucky enough to catch a whole game or maybe even a couple of games on a Saturday, I'm very happy about that. And going back to the company, and I say, I've always said that we're doing a good job when we're visiting our clients. It's more like catching up with friends. We obviously talk about the plans and making sure that the business side of things are going well. But really, if we have an hour-long meeting, a lot of times half of it is catching up with our clients and finding out what's going on with their families and that kind of thing. So that's an important part of what we do. And so it's really a lot of times, meeting our clients out is like catching up with old friends.
Great. Well, not only has this been interesting to understand a little bit about how you all are handling this merger and acquisition, I think you've given our listening audience and me a lot of good stuff to think about as we think about that whole area of employee benefits and retirement and how it impacts us. Us personally. So as just sort of a way to wind down, anything that maybe you have as sort of that last thought of advice either to the business owner or to us who are just trying to maneuver the waters of benefits before I ask you kind of my final question?
I have one comment that would be about the investments that people have in their retirement accounts. And I know a lot of people actually log into the website every day and check their balance, and I'm not real sure why. That'll just make you seasick. But one of the things that I would say is weather the storm. Don't react to something you see on the news. Maybe you saw something last night about an asset in your plan that's really doing well, so you're going to run in today and you're going to sell something and buy that because you're simply buying it at an inflated price. think long and hard before you make any changes in your retirement account. In 2008, when the market went down so bad, we had quite a few people that actually sold out and went to cash after the fact. It was too late, and they lost a bundle inside the account. If they had left it alone, it would be well back over where it was then. So before you do anything, ask somebody, talk to an advisor. Don't do any knee-jerk reactions inside of your retirement account.
So patience is a virtue.
It truly is.
Yeah. Lee, any?
You know, and as I was just thinking, you know, in my experience, when things have gotten tough, you know, sometimes it's, you trust life, and you never know what's coming around the next corner. I think when we, you know, when we got done with our the acquisition in Massachusetts, I didn't really think there was a whole lot more from that side that we were going to be able to accomplish. And then, you know, several weeks later, I ran into Karen again. And so you never know who you're going to run into in that next meeting. You never know what opportunities are out there. But if, you know, you have to keep your eyes open and make sure that you're willing to, you know, to bring it in and be and acknowledge it. So, you know, don't get down and, you know, always know something better might be around the corner.
Yeah, so it's almost like you have to – things you all are talking about is you got to plan and you got to be consistent in that planning. But I think the point that you're making is you also have to be open and flexible.
Absolutely.
And you have to seize opportunities as they arise because you never know what then great things that brings forward. So for our listening audience, how do we get in touch with you if we want to talk with you about our retirement and all these good things that you've been sharing with us?
Well, you can always visit our website at www.swerdlin.net, and all of our contact information is out there, and that would be the way to do it.
Okay. So for my final question, I always ask my guests, knowing what you know today, and maybe you've even shared some of that, but even from a personal perspective, what would you tell your 20-year-old self, either about what it takes to run a business, what it takes to make sure that you can be okay financially? Think back to that 20-year-old self. What advice would you give yourself today?
Higher education, probably. I think that would be the first place that I would start. I mean, college is great, but maybe at this point in life or looking at where we are today, a college degree may not be enough. You may want to think about doing more, and not necessarily for those around you, but that more is for you.
Hmm. Always be a learner.
Mm-hmm.
She bought you some time, Lee.
I know, and I didn't. It wasn't enough. What would I tell my 20-year-old self?
That you're not bulletproof?
Every 20-year-old needs to hear that, probably, right? Yeah, yeah, I'm not bulletproof. That's a good one. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you for coming in the studios today. Looks like it's going to be a nice weekend here in Atlanta. So join us next week here at the same time, 10 o'clock, because let's talk about it, because
growth matters.